When large-scale mining projects are proposed in Wisconsin and elsewhere, in many cases, some of the first people to speak out against them are tribal members. Arguments against large mines like the proposed GTAC iron ore mine in the Pinoki Hills of Ashland and Iron Counties and the sulfide mine in Crandon always cite environmental harm. But when it comes to Native people, is there more to the discussion about opposition to mining? Are there cultural or spiritual issues at stake? What about sovereignty and treaty rights? This hour, we'll speak with three tribal members to find out more about Native perspectives on mining in Wisconsin. I'm Rich Kramer. This is The West Side. I'd like to welcome my guests this hour. First, joining me in the studio after a frigid drive from the Ho-Chunk Nation in Black River Falls, I would like to welcome Robert Mann and Andy Cloud. Robert Mann is the Executive Director of Heritage Preservation for the Ho-Chunk Nation. Robert Mann, thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Rich. Thank you.
Good morning. And next, I would like to welcome in the studio Andy Cloud. Andy is a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation and is the founder of Migizi Advocates for Turtle Island. Andy Cloud, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Good morning.
And joining us by phone from the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa up in the Ashland area is Tribal Chairman Mike Wiggins Jr. And Chairman Wiggins, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Yeah, well, thank you. Our pleasure.
And listeners, what do you think about the anti-mining efforts of Native people in Wisconsin? And what do you think about the state's consideration given to tribal governments with relation to the iron ore mine, other previous mining issues in the state? Give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. We'll be taking calls all hour. Phone lines are wide open. 1-800-228-5615. So first off, I wanted to just kind of ask a general question, and I'll start with you, Robert Mann. There's this perception out there that Native people seem to care more about the environment than non-Native, or it's more of an issue for them. Is that true, and is there any substance to that argument?
Yes, it is true. We look at things a little differently probably than Western culture, and that's just part of our the way we were taught and what our elders told us of the creation of this earth. And so we have a deep respect for the earth, and this is always taught to us. And we're also taught to be stewards of this land, and this is very important part of our culture. So we try to teach this to our younger generation so this continues on. With the concerns that we have today, it's more important that more people kind of understand maybe a little bit more about our viewpoints and how we view things through the Native American culture.
Mm-hmm. Now, and Mike Wiggins Jr., I'm wondering, is that different? Is that kind of that idea of the sacredness and the connection with the land, is that unique to the Ho-Chunk, or is it kind of shared by tribal nations across the country?
Well, I think it's definitely indicative of a tribal worldview that sees us as being inside and interconnected and a part of nature rather than being away from it or aside from it or apart from it. But I'd say this, I mean, what I see up here in this particular resistance to GTAC's mining effort is it doesn't really matter whether you're tribal or non-tribal. People are very concerned about the environment up here and about water resources in particular, mostly because these types of mining initiatives that are kind of happening, whether you look at frac sand mining or the one where they want to explode the headwaters of the Bad River watershed, they're so catastrophic in the carnage that they bring to very important resources to all people. And I'm seeing people, I see people up here from all different walks of life understanding that. I think a lot of times when we say Western culture, in today's day and age, it's a sad fact that what we're talking about are corporations holding sway in legislative bodies, corporations holding sway in the way laws are codified. I mean, we've seen that with the Wisconsin mining law. That thing was rolled out as a feast on the ecosystems for the GTAC. And there's environmental harm and public and health impacts built into that law. Well, that ain't people of the Northland doing that. That's a corporation, that's lobbyists, and those are legislators that are under their influence.
And with that kind of, what kind of a challenge is that for tribes that probably don't have the type of lobbying and dollars that companies, you know, oil companies, coal companies, you know, energy companies might have?
Well, the main thing that the tribes have going for them is the main thing that the non-tribal communities have going for them up here, and that is, if the truth of the matter is going to be held to the light of day, this particular mine up here in Ashland County in the Pinoki Hills is going to be so harmful and so destructive and carry with it so many, I guess, potential unleashes of toxicity, that science and the truth of what's going to happen up here is the best thing we have going for us. And that's how you fight billionaires. You fight them with the truth. The truth of the matter is their activities will toxify groundwater aquifers, will impact surface water hydrology as it flows down into our communities, into our reservation homeland, and out into Lake Superior. That's the truth that GTAC is scurrying right now to try and avoid with all of their, you know, new legislative initiatives that are brought by Tom Tiffany, you know, like to exclude the public from these areas. I mean, when the public can walk in and find asbestos laying around, that's not good for the mining company. Now, how they respond is they get their Republican allies to try and they get their Republican allies to pass a law that excludes, you know, public scientists and people with knowledge from the area so that, you know, problems like that don't get brought up again. Well, the truth is on our side, so in the end, that's how we're going to fight billionaire mining companies.
Science is on the side, and there's a lot of non-Native people as well in the fight against the iron ore mine in northern Wisconsin. But I do want to get back to the spiritual, some of the spiritual issues, and I'm wondering if there's more to the opposition, Robert Mann. What types of spiritual or religious connections do Native people have with land, air, water? And I found something on the Ho-Chunk website about Earthmaker, and if you could walk us through that, I'd appreciate it.
We view things from, like I said, our stories from our elders that was passed on, and we look at this land is from created from the beginning of time. And sometimes that's a little hard for some people to understand. But we look at it like this. This is who we are. This is where we came from, is the land. I believe I once before said that, you know, that the earth does not belong to man. Man belongs to earth. And this holds true with everything that we believe in. We're a very spiritual people. A lot of things that we do, we're always talking about the different spirits, and we view the earth as what you referred to as Earth Maker, and we talk about the earth in our culture as our grandmother, and our grandmother Earth is a spirit, and we must do everything we can in our belief system to protect her from and take care of her from whatever things we do. So whatever we do, we always give thanks. We always pray to ask forgiveness. Let's say if we construct a building and we have to dig some land, dig some of the earth up to put in a foundation or whatever, we always give thanks to the to our grandmother Earth and ask her for forgiveness for doing this to her. And this way we try to stay in harmony with the nature and what you call as Earth Maker, Grandmother Earth. This is how we believe. Like I say, we're very spiritual. There's a lot of other things that are connected with this. Is, you know, we talk about the water. This is very important to all, to everyone. And we also pray to the water spirits. Sometime that was back in August of this year. My brothers and a few of our other relatives, we traveled up to Lac des Flambeaux, and we performed one of our traditional ceremonies up there, as to show us to let them know that we support them and that we're using our beliefs to pull everybody together to get them to help one another spiritually and to pray to the Creator. And this is we call it the Great Spirit, and this is who we're praying to. And this is what really what we try to do for not just our people, but like I say, with the other tribes, to bring them together to have a little solidarity spiritually. I'm not no politician by any means. I don't like to get into all of that myself. I, like I said, I believe in our culture. I believe in our spirituality, and this is what I firmly believe in. I know there's a lot of politics involved with it, and like I said, I don't get too involved with all that. It's not my thing. I don't really like to talk about that. I try to just educate people, I guess, about our ways and what we do, just so they can kind of get an understanding and maybe a little respect for our beliefs. So I try to explain things in that way.
All right. And for a reminder for the listeners, we are talking about Native perspectives on mining in Wisconsin. The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615. If you've got a question or a comment for our guests, we're joined by Mike Wiggins, tribal chairman of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. He joins us by phone. Also in studio is Robert Mann, executive director of Heritage Preservation for the Ho-Chunk Nation, and Andy Cloud, Ho-Chunk member and founder of the anti-frac sand mining group McGeezy Advocates for Turtle Island. The number, 1-800-228-5615. What do you think about Wisconsin's approach to mining, the state legislature's approach, or what do you think about the opposition from tribal and non-tribal people? Is it enough to halt the advance of the energy companies? 800-228-5615. And Andy Cloud, I'd like to quickly talk about McGeezy Advocates for Turtle Island. Could you explain what does that title mean at first glance?
Sure thing. McGeezy is an Anishinaabe for eagle, and one of my great friends who I lost this past September, that was his name. And Turtle Island is another, coming from the Anishinaabe culture, is kind of this the name that they give this continent that we're on, which we call North America. Hmm. And there's a story to that, too. And so when I incepted this idea of McGeezy Advocates for Turtle Island, or Maddie, it was for my friend Matt Stewart, who was all into the environment and education, and just, I think he taught me a lot about the issues and what to do and networking and bringing people together. So really coalition building. And I think that is the essence of this organization and what I wanted it to do, you know, because we're all in this together, you know.
And then speaking to that, as I mentioned, there's a lot of attention that's been paid to the large-scale mining, the proposed mining effort up in the Pinoki Hills, the GTAC. But frac sand mining has been a pretty large issue for folks in western Wisconsin. Do you feel that it's been overshadowed maybe statewide by the iron mine? And And are you working to get more people, tribal and non-tribal, to come together and learn more about frac sand mining?
Yeah, I know. To me, I think they're both the same. I think we think about the Pinoki Hills and the importance there. But also, you know, I am down in Jackson County, and I look at all these, you know, people from Eau Claire County, Monroe County, Clark County, and, you know, Juneau and Columbia and Sauk counties coming together and really looking at, you know, I mean, it's a different part of Wisconsin, but we're all Wisconsin, and really coming together and working on how to combat the mining companies. And I think in all of it, it's just one big evil thing that we have to, you know, coordinate and connect and talk against it and bring other people that aren't really in the conversation, bring them to the table and let them know what these things are doing to our land and our water.
And with that, I'd like to go to the phones. We've got our first caller of the morning, and from Eau Claire, we've got Jane on the line. Jane, thanks so much for calling in. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm just concerned about the mining, and I understand where the Native Americans are coming from. I respect their views, and I'm hoping that maybe the federal government can help support them also in protecting the environment. The thing that concerns me is that Governor Walker and the Republicans are so keen about pushing jobs. He wants jobs no matter what they are, not the type. I think they should be looking into the sort of jobs that might come out of this. And I think to wreck the environment, the jobs will last for a relatively short period of time. The people will leave because many of the people will come from out of state, and then it'll leave that beautiful part of our state in terrible shape. And as the other person said, the mining, different mining things in the other, you know, in my part of the state, also the frack mining, that sort of thing, frack sand mining. There are lots of things that are against they're doing things against our environment. And this is such a great state. I think we need to encourage people to, you know, look at the beauty of the state that will go away, really.
Gotcha.
And the sort of people that we come in, we want to have tourists come in, and so if they could put money into infrastructure, you know, for the different parts of the state, that would cause some jobs and that sort of thing. But this area, the mining up north, is near Copper Falls State Park, and any of you who've been there, it is an exquisite place.
Mm-hmm.
And I just it really makes me feel sad to think that this can be desecrated by this sort of business. And once it starts, I've talked to a friend from Minnesota who lived in the mining area there, and she said that it leaves things in really bad condition. And
well, Jane, thank you for the call. With that, I want to go to Mike Wiggins to get a response.
That's fine.
Thank you, and feel free to hold on the line if you like, Mike Wiggins. Governor Walker and the Republicans have claimed this mine would be a huge job creator. They throw out numbers like in the upwards of thousands, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, depending on how you measure it. Isn't that a serious issue, especially in that part of the state, which could use some jobs?
Well, I think the key word in what you just said was depending on how you measure it. I mean, I've seen the job creation scene jump dramatically without being based in anything close to reality. I remember when Matt Fifield, the president of GTEC, came to a public hearing and talked to the Ashland community up here, and he talked about how for the first couple of years, they would look to bring in 30 of their workers, meaning GTEC employees that were already on dole, and pair them up with 30 to 60 new hires. Now, he didn't say, and there is no guarantees anywhere, that those would be people from Wisconsin, but he said that they would pair their employees up with new employees for the first couple years. And then after that, they would see what their labor pool needs are. Here's the discrepancy that GTAC has to face. They claim that there's new technology that would allow them to mine differently, allow them to mine safer. The challenge is that new technology that they try to hang their hat on is non-humanized type of mechanisms to mine. Mm. The other discrepancy is their labor projections that they hang their hat on in terms of job creation are built mimicking some of the old established mines from the Iron Range of Minnesota. Now, if you're different and you're safer than the mines in Minnesota, how can you build your labor reports mimicking those very mines that you claim to be separate from and completely different from? Hmm. They've never been able to answer that. Matt Fifield, after he said things like that, after he said, like, for the first couple of years, there took to be maybe 30 to 60 new jobs in Wisconsin, after he said that type of stuff, he was sent packing, and he's in parts unknown now.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Are you still there, Mike?
Yeah.
Okay. We lost Jane, but go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
Okay. No. So the challenge of job creation is really is really stands tall for GTAC, and I think the reality is if they want to profit, two things had to happen. Number one, they ain't gonna be able to hire many people in order to profit. Number two, they needed to be able to poison, destroy, and just have a free for all. Without any encumbrances like environmental protections. We've seen the one hand of that story kind of play out in a new mining law, which hands them, you know, shortened timelines, freedom to proceed without adequate review and illumination and transparency. And, you know, and that's going to be something that we up here in the Northland are going to have to respond to try and to bring some truth to the, you know, to the activities as they play out.
And definitely want to get...
There's one other side of the coin that I just want to mention briefly. If we stopped right now discussing the mine, and we had to talk about Governor Walker and Madison's efforts to try and infuse the Northland up here with some economic development and or good things for the economy, what would we talk about? That's the true tragedy that's playing out here, is that everyone in Madison has got their sights set on exploding the Pinocchio Hills as a means to try and generate some economic activity. When there are thinkers, entrepreneurs, developers, clean energy, renewable energy, biomass efforts, and those types of things related to sustainability that could be being discussed. You know, the mine is like a huge obstacle right now for the type of work and the types of discussions that should be taking place with integrity to try and get some of these local economies going and get the good folks of the Northland, you know, working and interconnected in ways that maybe we haven't seen before.
I'd like to go back to the phones one more time here before the break. The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615 to speak on the issue that we are talking about this hour, which is Native perspectives on mining in Wisconsin. We're talking about frac sand mining, iron ore mining, you name it. Christine in Fairchild is on the line. Christine, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
You're welcome. I would like to make a comment. Mike Wiggins started talking about the truth. Robert Mann spoke eloquently about spiritual belief, and the truth, common sense, and spirituality are all integrated here. 2 years ago, I had a frac sand mine move in a mile north of our home. I raised trees. I also live here, and I believe very strongly that Mother Earth is sacred. But what dawned on me after being very active for the last 2 years in monitoring and being available to our political, local, and state meetings is the fact that people have forgotten the common sense element. We live from this earth. This earth gives us food and animals and opportunities. And when you start depleting resources for money, I understand that money in this world is very important, but you cannot eat it, you cannot drink it, and you cannot breathe it. And when these mines pollute our very water, the aquifers, the groundwater, and then harms the land, we no longer have those resources. And when these sand mines are blowing this invisible to the eye sand that I've seen accumulate, not that I've seen the actual frac sand, but what it carries with it on the windowsills of elders in this community. And there is denial on the parts of the businesses and even in the community. It's like there's a carrot being held up saying, you can have money if we allow this to happen, but no one has seen the depletion of the very essence of what the earth provides us to live. And I'm appalled with all the educated human beings in this world that they're not seeing anymore the large picture that we're all interrelated. And I thank you, and I thank all of those who are trying to speak the truth, because it takes all of us to impact a reality that's grim, that if you close your eyes to it, one day our children or our grandchildren are going to wake up and they won't be able to have the kind of life that we've been allowed to have, the prosperity of taking care of this earth. So I thank you, and I thank your show for allowing this voice to be heard. And it is growing. It is growing here, and I'm grateful for that.
Well, thank you very much for the call, Christine. And Andy, I think I'm going to go to you for that. I guess you can't eat money, and the jobs issue does come up with frac sand mining as well, absolutely. So any thoughts on Christine's statement there?
Yeah, I think she was right on with everything. That's awesome. Because, you know, there's one saying, and she got right at it, is like, once you realize the last tree has been cut down, once you realize the last river has been poisoned, and, you know, you will then realize money cannot be eaten. And I think so much of Western culture and the Western world and industry, you know, is just that push for money, more money, this greed that we have. And, you know, I'm reminiscent of Wall Street, and that greed is good. And I think that really has an impact on the way we think about things right now as Indigenous people, because most Indigenous people, you know, are getting looped into that greed. And it's unfortunate. And so, you know, when we have things like this, this is the mining and with the land and the water being affected, I think there's an opportunity there that we can go back to how we should think about things as Indigenous people.
Robert Mann, I'm wondering, is it a struggle to keep the traditional and the culture, the heritage alive among Native people, more so now than it has been in the past? Has it been more difficult?
Well, it has to some extent, but a lot of what I do is educate, like I said, is to educate people about our culture. I've worked with other groups. We've had other issues regarding some of our practices, and when we run into some of these things like this, is what I try to do is educate maybe the state leaders, the federal leaders, into trying to explain to them our beliefs and how it interrelates with what they're doing. Maybe they're violating some of our own First Amendment rights. I'm a strong advocate of our First Amendment so we can continue our beliefs. I've worked with various other organizations and educating them about our beliefs as well. I really like to thank Mr. Wiggins for all of his comments and what he said. That everything he said has been right to the point on the political and governmental side. And that's very important. Like I said, I'm not a political man myself, but I like to kind of really push on this on the spiritual part, and that's what I really think is important to all Native people. And that's what I try to. I can't speak for everyone, but what I try to do is just to make them understand that this is very important to our people, and try to get people to understand that it's really important, the educational part of it. So that's what I try to push on.
With that, we're talking about Native perspectives on mining in Wisconsin. We're joined by Andy Cloud. She's a Ho-Chunk Nation member and founder of anti-frac sand mining group McGeezy Advocates for Turtle Island, or MADI. Also joined in studio by Robert Mann, executive director of Heritage Preservation for the Ho-Chunk Nation. And Mike Wiggins is on the phone. He's the tribal chairman of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. We'll take more of your calls when we return. This is The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in this frigid Monday morning. Stay warm and stay safe out there, people. We're talking this hour about Native perspectives on mining in Wisconsin, both frac sand mining and the proposed iron ore mining that may take place in the northern Wisconsin Pinoki Hills along the Ashland and Iron County border. I'm joined by three tribal members. Andy Cloud is a Ho-Chunk Nation member and founder of anti-frac sand mining group McGeezy Advocates for Turtle Island, based in Black River Falls. Robert Mann is the executive director of Heritage Preservation for the Ho-Chunk Nation, and Mike Wiggins Jr. is tribal chairman of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615 if you'd like to get a question or a comment in. I'm interesting. We just started speaking about the governmental side of things, and I want to talk a bit about treaty rights. And Mike Wiggins, have treaty rights, I mean, I'll just put it bluntly, have treaty rights been stepped on in the whole issue of this Pinoki Hills mine?
Well, I think from a consultation standpoint, we're still in the beginning stages of this whole process, but the lack of consultation, with integrity and with true meaning has been something that's been a hallmark of what's taken place thus far.
So the state hasn't really been listening, state lawmakers?
Well, I think, the tribes were given invites to give public testimony and stuff like that. But at the same time, the treaty rights and the consultation tenets are built more into intergovernmental, government-to-government type of dialogue, and ultimately negotiation. And as we all know, there was no negotiation at all with the things that transpired legislatively.
Right. As far as the Ho-Chunk Nation is concerned and frac sand mining, are there any treaty rights that could be impacted by the frac sand mining issue? And I guess I'll go to Robert Mann for that.
Yeah, I believe there are some violations, and it's like I say, it kind of it gets very complex. I'm not really quite up to date on all the treaties that were done in the past, but I know that the tribe has taken some steps to kind of push towards some of these violations, I believe, in the treaty rights.
And Andy Cloud, in December 2012, the Ho-Chunk legislature passed a resolution in general opposition to frac sand mining. And I'm wondering, with that piece of paper out there and that resolution, does that mean that they're kind of supporting what your group is doing? Or do you guys have official support from the Ho-Chunk Nation? Or is it kind of a implied support?
I would say the support from this resolution that came in 2012, but then they also brought it back this past October and passed it again.
Okay.
I think from my standpoint, that's all I've seen the nation really do when it comes to sand mining, is that they passed this resolution. However, I don't think there is any kind of initiation or things that they've taken to really put teeth on this resolution. Hmm. So, I mean,
what would you like to see maybe the Ho-Chunk Nation and other, as you try to build a coalition, other tribes do?
Right. I would like to see the nation really, you know, use the resources that we have, you know, the revenue resources, and put together something where we're educating our own tribal members as well as the public about what is really going on, the issues that are, you know, air monitoring, and the wear and tear on the earth, the waste that's going on when these sand mines are being constructed and developed, and the hurt that it's doing to our water and our land again. And I would like to see the tribes come together, all of them, because with mining, you know, it's widespread, it's rampant. I think we're going to see a boom, and it's unfortunate. But I think we have 11 bands in the state of Wisconsin, 11 nations. And, I mean, if we come together, like we should, because we are all related, I think we can definitely do something. I think that can be permanent. And we did it before when, you know, when there was the...
Crandon?
The Crandon mine, yes. And that was 30 years ago, and we shut that down. Or there was the collaboration of, you know, Chippewa members and non-Chippewa members, and that got pushed down, and they bought the land. So I think something like that can be done again, and it should be done again.
Back to the phones. We've got Neil and Cameron on the air. Neil, thanks for calling in. Thanks for hanging on the line. What's on your mind?
Hey, Rich. Good to talk to you, and thanks to the guests for the information they're giving out here. And I'd like to thank the Native Americans for getting involved in the frac sand mining issue that we have in our western Wisconsin area. I'd just like to point out, I've done extensive research the last 4 months on frac sand mining, written some papers on it.
That Neil.
Yes. You got my email.
Yeah, I got your email. Okay. I'm sorry to interrupt, but go ahead.
And I'd just like to point out, you know, something that really bothers me is the talk of job creation. And I'm all for job creation. I have absolutely no problem with job creation. And in fact, I am a Republican, but I am totally opposed to this frac sand mining or any kind of mining in our state. The job creation they keep talking about, and they talk about thousands of jobs. Well, the reality of it is you're talking about 3,000 jobs roughly for directly involved with frac sand mining. And then you get the question of, well, how many other jobs are created outside of that or in addition to the 3,000 jobs that are created? And Stephen Deller, I would encourage anybody to look up Stephen Deller, UW Wisconsin Madison professor of economics, and look at his report. And, you know, he estimates for every 3 mining jobs, there's 1 job created in the outside sector. And that job is going to be a significant lower pay than the actual frac sand mining or any other mining jobs that are created. Hmm. So this whole job creation mantra is completely overblown. And, you know, 3,000 jobs, there's 3 million jobs in the state of Wisconsin, so it's 0.1% of total job creation. Sure. And we're going to destroy our hills, the Pinocchio Hills. I cannot imagine them going in and mining them hills. I am just floored that this is even a consideration. Mm-hmm. But I would encourage anybody to go, Stephen Deller's report, Crispin Pierce at UW Eau Claire has his... air monitoring program in effect, and his data is eye-opening, to say the least. And it's just amazing that this is going on. And again, I applaud the Native Americans for getting involved in this. And I believe, isn't there they look out 7 generations, isn't that their kind of their belief that we should look out 7 generations for what we're going to do to our earth and passing it on to future generations?
Well, let me put that to, I guess, to Andy Cloud.
Yeah, There's actually a seventh generation that you're always supposed to look forward to. And, you know, that's our children, their grandchildren, and it's just collectively the seventh generation. And I think Mike can speak on that, too.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Mike Wiggins, would you like to chime in?
Well, yeah, it's taken the long view, essentially. You know, when we look at these ecosystems around us, we look at our home and the things that we need for a good life, there's an understanding of what that means today here in, you know, 2014. But taking a long view, what's going to be like 100 years from now? You know, are rain clouds going to visit as often? Is the sun going to be unfriendly? And, you know, are these polar vortexes that we're trapped in up here in Northland right now, and we're looking at minus 50 degree wind chills, are those going to be something the way the winters are because of the loss of Arctic ice? We don't know what's going to happen 100 years from now. Well, what about 200 years from now? What about 300? And it's just that notion of, I know the Pinocchio Hills just infuse Lake Superior with good, clean, cold water. I know that giant muskie actually go upstream towards the Pinocchio Hills in the height of summer because of the cold water components that the Pinocchio Hills provide from those groundwater aquifers up there coming out of the mountains. Those muskie go upstream away from Lake Superior because of how cold the water temp is. Now, we could jump online and we could research. Lake Superior is warming at unprecedented levels, you know, with catastrophic events predicted on account of that. It's just thinking about what are those babies that ain't even here yet out there in the on the horizon line, what are they going to have to deal with? And can we leave some of these things that are so critical for life in general, but also for a good life here for them, you know?
Mm-hmm. Neil, thank you for the call, and thanks for that answer there, Mike. And we're going to go back to the phones in just a second, but first I want to take a break, and when we get back, I want to talk about, we'll take another couple calls, we'll talk about resistance to mining, and then what lays ahead in this big discussion that we're having in the state. We're talking about the Native perspectives on mining in Wisconsin. This is The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us. We're talking this hour about Native perspectives on mining in Wisconsin. Our guests are Mike Wiggins, tribal chairman of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. He joins us by phone. Joining me in studio, Robert Mann, executive director of Heritage Preservation for the Ho-Chunk Nation, and Andy Cloud, Ho-Chunk Nation member and founder of anti-frack sand mining group McGeezy Advocates for Turtle Island. We've got enough time to take a couple more calls. If you care to try, give us a dial at 1-800-228-5615. I want to talk a little bit about resistance to mining. And Mike Wiggins, harvest camps have been set up by the Lac-Couturier and now Bad River tribal members near where the iron mining is set to take place in Ashland and Iron counties. And first of all, I'm wondering, was anybody in the harvest camp last night, you know, living, camping in this kind of weather?
Yeah, a good friend of mine, Nick Vanderpie, is living in the harvest camp right now. He was in his wall tent last night, and he's got a wonderful little setup, and I'm sure he was snug and cozy drinking chaga tea, which is from a mushroom, very healthy antioxidant based tea. He's doing well, but he's a hearty individual, and I do believe Melvin Gasper from LCO was up there too, and Melvin has been the ambassador of goodwill for the camp. So
yeah, that's amazing. And there have been attempts by Iron County, to evict the harvest camp. Have they got any right to do that? Because this is a treaty issue, isn't it? Is it not?
Well, yeah, the tribal response would be they don't have the right to do that because it's treaty-based. It's not truly camping as much as it's as much as it's a base for some of the treaty rights activities that have been taking place in terms of harvesting and usufructuary rights, or the utilization of usufructuary rights, hunting, fishing, gathering. So... So that still remains, kind of a matter to be settled with negotiation and compromise. But You know, the thing about resistance that I just want to mention quickly is that, you know, when you look around a big picture, the mining companies and some of these catastrophic projects are coming to neighborhoods now. They're coming to communities, and more than that, they're coming to natural settings that are unbelievably beautiful and unfettered. You know, the mining company extracting natural resources way out somewhere, unseen and unheard, those days are getting to be pretty much a thing of the past because of the fact that extraction is not sustainable. Once you're done with an area, it's destroyed. You've taken what's there. You need to move on. What are we seeing? You see them up in the sockeye salmon, you know, capital of the world, up in Bristol Bay, trying to dig gold and other things. You see them knocking on a doorstep of the Boundary Waters canoe area up in northern Minnesota. You see them in what was areas of special natural resource interest, so precious they couldn't possibly be mitigated here in Wisconsin in the Pinoki Hills. These companies, and because of the way mining is unsustainable, are now in areas that are were once thought to be, you know, untouchable because of how precious, how critically important they were to the environment, and because of all of the mystery and everything else that surrounded these places. Hmm. Mining companies are knocking on a door, and just like frac sand mining down there around Chippewa Falls and Eau Claire, they're in beautiful hills, they're along riverways, and they're impacting people. And there's the genesis of that resistance. Now, when it comes to tribes, have you ever heard Bad River isn't going to go pick a fight in Bristol Bay, Alaska? But the Bad River Reservation is all we have. It's all we've ever had since we entered into treaties, so that everyone could live a good life. Mm-hmm. And it's all that, presumably, that we're ever going to have moving into the future when we look seven generations forward. The Bad River Reservation depends on the headwaters of the Bad River watershed for clean groundwater aquifers to drink from, for clean surface water to fish and gather and to recreate and swim in. And so when we look at the explosion of what would ultimately be 22 miles, but for starters, 4 miles, 1,000-foot deep, 4 miles long, 1,000-foot deep, hole in the headwaters of our watershed here, of our home, that's problematic. And we have no choice but to resist that, because this is where our people are going to live from here to eternity. How could it be any other way? And I'll tell you, like we heard earlier, money is not a driving catalyst when we think about those things that we're going to need to live a good life into the future. I mean, money is definitely the way the world works, and I don't want to be ignorant to that. At the same time, for our people who are home within their homeland here, if their groundwater aquifers are compromised, if there's arsenic and everything else in their drinking water, and there's sulfuric acid coming down the riverways, and all of the things that they depend on are gone, in an ever-changing world here that seems to be getting a little harsher, how is that going to be viewed as anything other than something to resist and to try and push back against? And all we ultimately are saying and pushing for is to leave those mountains intact, to leave them alone. It's not a warlike thing. It's more of a peaceful cry to say, hey, don't explode them with ammonium nitrate. Don't haul that mountainside away and destroy all of those groundwater aquifers, wetlands, streams, whitewater rapids, falls, and everything else that are here. Leave them alone.
And we are getting very close to the top of the hour, so I kind of want to get a what comes next and what is the future of these situations from our guests. First, Mike Wiggins, we've got about 2 minutes left in the program. Will this mine be built? Do you see it happening?
I don't see it happening, no. And what comes next is work and jobs for lawyers. That's yeah. What comes next.
Gotcha. Andy Cloud, and as far as the frac sand mining issue, there are something like 240 permitted mines throughout the state. Is it too late, or what do you see happening in the frac sand, the fight against frac sand among Native people and non-Native people?
Yeah, I don't think it's too late at all. I think, you know, when you talk about resistance and what to look forward to, I think we have to come back to our roots. I think we have to retell the stories of our elders. I think we have to come together and, you know, start being connected to earth again and feel what that is, you know, farming, gardening, coming back to something that we innately always have had.
All right. Thank you so much. I wish we had another hour, folks. That's our time. I'd like to thank my guests for their discussion. Mike Wiggins is the tribal chairman of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. Robert Mann is the executive director for Heritage Preservation for the Ho-Chunk Nation. Andy Cloud is a Ho-Chunk Nation member and founder of the anti-frac sand mining group, McGeezy Advocates for Turtle Island. Listeners, I apologize for not being able to get to all the calls. I appreciate the calls nonetheless, though. Tune in next week. We're going to be talking with lawmakers, state lawmakers from Western Wisconsin, about what to expect in this next session, this next chunk of the 2013-2014 state legislative session. So stay tuned. A big thanks to Team Westside, including Mort Cypress, for braving the cold to come in and do on-air production. Henry Lippold for producing this hour. Also thanks to Tiffany Coggins for promotions. And, of course, Dean Collenbeck for keeping the ducks in a row. I'm Rich Kramer. Stay warm. Be safe. Thanks for listening. We'll chat again next week.